Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impuga. This evening, we'll talk about the quality of democracy in Africa. And with us tonight is Fred Omulo. Fred is a Kenyan journalist. He joins us by phone from Kisumu. Good evening, Fred.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
You're welcome. And also joining us is regular panelist Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. He joins us from Durban, South Africa. Welcome to the show, Suleiman.
Thank you very much for inviting me, Douglas.
You're welcome. Gentlemen, as I said, our topic tonight, we're talking about the quality of democracy in Africa. Let's look at one aspect of democracy, which are elections. Last year, a public survey of elections by the Pan-African Research Network, Afrobarometer, showed Africans distrusted the national electoral commissions and the quality of their elections. Just over 40% of Africans in 36 countries believed that the last elections in their country were free and fair. 25 said they trusted their electoral commissions a lot, and many described elections where bribery was rampant, media bias persisted, and voters were often threatened with violence at polls. Now, key elections later this year, gentlemen, are Kenya, Rwanda, and Angola in August. There's Liberia in October, and of course, the unpredictable DR Congo later in the year. Now, since we mentioned Kenya, let's start with Fred in Kenya. You just had primaries for the political parties over there. How did it go?
Yes. We've just had primaries over the last 3 weeks. And the interesting thing right here in Kenya is that right now it was staggered. Mm-hmm. Previously, it used to happen all in one day. All the major political parties at the moment would hold their primaries in one day for all the positions. And the attempt used to be about making sure that every position at the federal as well as at the national level had a candidate. Mm-hmm. Well, Kenya passed a new constitution, which was implemented from 2011 up until now. In fact, we haven't finished that process yet. And the number of positions increased almost fivefold. Mm-hmm. Where previously we only used to decide on the flag bearer at the top for the presidency, the flag bearer for the Congress level, which we call parliament here in Kenya, and the local authorities or the local representatives. Right now we have six positions. You have the president and the deputy at the top. You have the governor, which is the leader of the county or the federal level. You have a women representative because affirmative action is now enshrined in our constitution in Kenya. You have a senator to represent the county at the national level. You also have a congressman like we used to have in the old days, and we also have a local representative. Here we call them the members of the county assembly. So that change that happened in 2010 has completely transformed the politics and the election process here in Kenya.
For the good or for the worst? Transformed them in what sense? For the good or for the worst?
For the better.
I see.
For the better.
Okay.
At the same time as all these changes were taking place, there is this whole process, this whole information revolution that is taking place in the whole world right now. Mm-hmm. Right now, information is at the fingertips of each and every Kenyan or each and every African who wants to know about anything and everything. Smartphones are now available for as little as $20 looking at American terms, right? Mm-hmm. For as little as that, and you'll be there in the village and you can access the internet and you can access Facebook and you can access all these channels from where you learn about civic engagement, you learn about the electoral process, you learn about the positions and their responsibilities. So the politicians are facing a very big and interesting challenge. They can no longer play the old political game in the new dispensation. So that is the change that I'm sort of trying to explain to you. I hope I'm coming out clearly.
Oh, yeah, yeah, indeed you are. Suleiman, you just had Fred there tell us about the party primaries in Kenya. Since we're looking at the quality of elections, democracy for that matter, compare that to what's happening in Rwanda, where they'll have elections almost the same week. The differences must be glaring.
Actually, what our brother is trying to establish there is some of the benchmarks of the good or of the sincere democratic system. So you find there are several aspects which one has to look at when you're looking at a proper democracy. First of all, the document itself and the manner in which it was promulgated. You'll find that the time at which it was promulgated, is it reflecting the interest of the nation, or does it reflect the interest of such people who are drawing it at the time they were drawing it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in case of Kenya, you can see that there is an element of a national interest within it. You cannot compare it with countries where a particular group has drawn up a constitution where the environment is partisan.
Mm-hmm.
Once the constitution is drawn up in a partisan constitution, give it 100 years, give it 200 years, it will never be democratic. Therefore, it will be very unfair for us to compare Rwanda, where you have got a single group drawing up a constitution with its particular interest. In such a case, you cannot trust them to draw a constitution which reflect the interests of the nation. That is why there is a clear difference between what is going on in Kenya and what is going on in Rwanda. In Rwanda, it will remain sham so long as it was drawn by a partisan group with its own interest, reflecting its own interest, not national interest as such.
I see. Fred, there have been reports whereby the opposition in Kenya has always been accusing the country's Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission of being inept and biased. Have things improved as we head towards August?
Yes, we've had quite an interesting 2 years. Over the last 2 years, a lot of the electoral commission's work has come under scrutiny in terms of how they conduct the processes, how they prepare themselves, even down to the level of how they acquire just ordinary voter identification kits.
Mm-hmm.
So what the opposition has been doing, of course, led by Raila Odinga, who used to be the prime minister here, they've been pushing a lot of legislation to actually ensure that the Electoral Boundaries Commission doesn't have any loopholes, because those loopholes are very important in an electoral process that is not fully supervised by independent observers. There are so many loopholes. Recently, I was sitting with one of the local officials who actually, we call them returning officers. Returning officers supervise the electoral process during election cycle at the Congress level,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at a district, say, for example, a small district like in Kisumu, we have about 7 districts within the county, and the returning officer handles one of them. And he was telling me about all the loopholes that exist and how they've been there since the Electoral Commission was constituted in 1992. And the opposition has been pushing legislation to manage this. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one example, maybe to give you a clearer picture.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, the returning officer would announce his results here about the Congress and whatever he was under his jurisdiction. And then he would send the results to Nairobi, which is our capital here in Kenya. Then the tallying center in Nairobi would collect and collate all these results and declare so-and-so is the president, right?
Mm-hmm.
What the opposition has succeeded in doing, for example, is to push for a legislation that the returning officer's results about the presidential vote are final. They cannot be modified, they cannot be tinkered with. So if you have an army of observers, immediately you set up, as a candidate, you set up, for example, Hillary Clinton, for example, in Nairobi, sets up a tallying center and has her observers in all the districts. the moment they have the results there, they share those results via WhatsApp or whatever it is, and her team just add these figures. So if the Electoral Commission wants to play games between the districts and Nairobi, they can't do it anymore. Mm-hmm. That is one example of a law that has been passed to ensure the integrity of elections in Kenya. That is one thing. The second thing was the acquisition of voter registration kits. Last election in 2013, we had a fiasco in which a French company supplied some voter identification and voting kits. And, I mean, 80% of these things were not working on election day. Mm-hmm. So there are timelines that were actually entrenched in law. And now the Electoral Commission is working really hard to ensure that it has an election management system that functions on election day. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the changes we've been experiencing in this country.
I see. Suleiman, despite those changes Fred mentioned there, like in previous elections in the past two decades, the fear of violence, ethnic polarization, and escalating political tensions still loom large in Kenya. What's your take on that?
It's still large, but it depends on the process.
Mm-hmm.
Here we have, first of all, we have got all the ingredients of the democratic system in place. We have got an executive with a mindset of giving a country a democratic election.
Mm-hmm.
We have got a parliament with a mindset of giving the country a free and fair election. We have got a judiciary which is ready to support the system. And then we have got the supporting organs, the supporting institutions. The Electoral Commission, as my brother has said, there have been changes. The last Electoral Commission was fired in a transparent manner because of the citizens.
Mm-hmm.
It was fired. That one alone comes up the tempers in the country. Number two, as my brother has said, okay, let me first look at the institutions. We have got the Electoral Commission, we have got the security institution, we have got the media, the civil society. All these organs are participating fully.
Mm-hmm.
My brother has said, Raila Odinga, through the parliament or through civil society, they have been recommending changes. And the parliament is willing to look at them, is willing to listen at them. Unlike in other areas where, unlike the previous time, where the ears were not open, where the mindset was not open as such. So as far as it's concerned today, I think all the ingredients of a peaceful election, of course it cannot be watertight peaceful, but all the ingredients, all the actors, they are participating fully. There is free flow of information. There is transparency. There is the mindset. There is willingness to have a free and fair election. Number three, there is also the decentralization. Many of our politics, one of the things which give us problem is the decentralized election, which limits the number of posts which people are vying for. Right now, as my brother said, in Kenya, it is too decentralized. There are so many areas where people can have access to leadership. So there isn't too much fight as such for posts. People can contest at county level. People can contest at national level. So you find that at least all those who are competing, the tempers are diluted. So which I think, unlike in 2007, maybe we might be going for a better election. And number three, the alliances which have been made, I think, they are also not bad. They are trying to align the tribal elements as much as possible to avoid the clear-cut cleavages which we have had in the past.
I see. Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll be back shortly to continue our discussion of quality of democracy in Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing the quality of democracy across the continent in Africa. Our panelists are Fred Umolo, a Kenyan journalist, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 6 in Washington. Fred, Suleiman, if I went for that very brief break, mentioned issues like the impact of the alliances being formed on the opposition. And you had earlier mentioned also, both of you, the decentralizing power to the provinces.
Yes.
Do you think those two factors may help ease the ethnic tensions that have normally followed Kenya elections?
Yes, it will. Though at this stage, I cannot exactly say we will not witness chaos. But two factors, actually there are three factors, which personally I think are going to affect this election. Number one is devolution or federalism, as you call it in America or Germany. Number two is ethnicity. And number three is the economy. Now, devolution has dispersed power. Where previously you had a lot of congressmen fighting for seats at the districts, and then you had the president and or the presidential candidates fighting for the national power, right now you have 47. We have 47 counties in Kenya. So we have 47 governors. And these people are very influential, and they have a lot of resources at their disposal. So what we used to have previously, where ethnicity would be the big war at the national table, has now been sort of dispersed. Now we have clanism within what we call the counties or the states, right?
Mm-hmm.
So people are looking at their preferred governor, and you might find that the preferred governor is not necessarily in the president's in the presidential candidates, the same party,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So while previously you didn't have this filter in between you and the president, and you would only fight that war for the president, right now you're fighting two or three wars. You're fighting for your presidential candidate, but you're not so concerned about that. You're really concerned about the governor, because the governor is the person who lives with you in the county, provides you with services, jobs, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also fighting to put your senator so that your senator can go to Nairobi, which is the capital, to represent your voice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been diluted, and it's become a very rich but confusing mixture. And this is sort of bringing a change, a transition, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to 2007, right now the passions are really different, because you have a passion for someone at the district level, you have another passion for someone at the county level, and then you have another passion totally different at the national level. And all these elections happen on the same day. Unlike countries like America, where you have midterm elections that deal with just the congressmen, and then you have every 4 years, you have an election that deals with only the presidency,
Suleiman, hearing the Kenyan experiment there, let's wait to see what will happen. But Africa never ceases to amaze, because like in 2006, last year, people hailed Ghana after the country elected Nana Akufo-Addo as its new president. But in the same year, several incumbent presidents, including Uganda's Museveni, Zambia's Edgar Lungu, Ali Bongo, Ondimba of Gabon, won re-election despite protests from opposition members, violence, and internet shutdowns. So, and this attempt, this doesn't happen so far apart. We can find Kenya and then the neighboring countries doing something different. To what extent do you see these contradictions affecting the continent?
Douglas, first of all, we have to divide the continent into two.
Mm-hmm.
We have made some progress in some few countries, South Africa, Namibia, Ghana, Nigeria, Kenya is following in. These are on the road to proper democracies. Some of them, like us in South Africa, we are a proper democracy. What determines a proper democracy and not a proper democracy? You are talking of countries, as I've said, who have got both the constitution and the players in the constitution. The constitution which were written on a wrong premise. The people who wrote them on wrong premise. The players who are implementing them are implementing them in a wrong premise. So in countries like Uganda, Gabon, Rwanda, Cameroon, you are not talking of democracy. There is no democracy whatsoever. A country, in order for a country to have democracy, is not about elections only. Elections are just a component on the cogwheel. It's just one cogwheel. There are other issues. What about the institutions supporting democracy?
Mm-hmm.
These institutions have to be tested. You have to have a tested judiciary. You have to have a tested electoral commission. You have to have a tested executive. Otherwise, in those countries where you are talking of a parliament which is almost non-existent. A parliament like now in Uganda, which passes the Public Order Act, which is inherently violating the constitution which they wrote. So the parliament itself passes another law which is contravening because it is abusing all the rights written in the constitution. So you can see that the parliament itself is dead, because the people who are implementing it are dead. You have a parliament which allows someone to be arrested, or you have got a judiciary which allows someone to be incarcerated when she was exercising her freedom of expression. But the judiciary is not afraid. You have got a judiciary which announces fraudulent results for a leader. So in such cases, those countries which we are talking about, Uganda, Cameroon, those are not democracies. They are taking democracies as meaning elections, lining up people and then they put a ballot paper in the box. That is not what it is about. If you want to see democracy, come to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
The public protector, it is one of the institutions supporting democracy.
I see.
Rules against the president. The court rules against the president and orders him to pay money, and he goes and pays it. Today, as we speak, the court has ruled that the president has to explain why he reshuffled. We have got courts which send the commissioners of police in prison without fear or fear. That is what they call democracy. When the institutions supporting democracy are healthy and alive, when the separation of power is exercised freely and the organs are healthy and alive, not where most of the institutions, you only have the executive which is alive, all the other institutions are dead. That is not a democracy.
I see. We're running out of time, but Fred, Kenya must have learned a lot since the last election that brought problems, and what has happened since then. There's still this, because now President Uhuru Kenyatta and his Vice President Ruto most likely won't be facing Oginga Odinga. Raila Odinga. So. Those regional realignments are normally the spark of violence if there's some dispute. How is the lay of the field now? Has that been taken care of?
In terms of security, let me tell you, Suleiman's words, I totally agree with them 100%. Democracy is about institutions and processes. Now, looking at the issue you brought up about the possibility of a stalemate or violence, that brings us to examining the security institutions. The security institutions in Kenya tend to be 100% under the control of the government, the reigning government, or the government in place, which at this particular moment in time is Uhuru Kenyatta and Ruto, who is the president and his deputy. But Kenya being Kenya, you cannot maintain these institutions in a homogeneous manner. You have to have all sorts of people from all the communities and all the ethnicities. And if you come up with a funny order that does not resonate with a majority of them, then you're entertaining mutiny. You see?
Yeah.
So this, yeah, this in a sense has forced even the previous president, Mwai Kibaki, whenever they have these kinds of difficult situations and whenever they face the possibility of mutiny in the police or in the paramilitary sections or in the Kenya Defense Forces, the army, this makes them adopt a middle ground or a centrist position that allows them not to anger the security agencies. Because let's not pretend this is Africa, and there is always that spectre of a coup or a mutiny hanging over your head as the dictator or as the president.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, so looking at the forthcoming election, our hope, though it is not supreme, our hope is that sense can prevail with the ruling administration knowing the homogeneity present within the security systems.
Right?
Yeah. But at the end of the day, in my view, I think only two factors will determine, actually three factors will determine this election and who is likely to emerge the new president. Number one is going to be devolution, which has totally transformed Kenya. You have development reaching the most remote areas just because of those 4 years, and people are now more engaged civically. Number two is going to be ethnicity. Ethnicity is not dead. It is dying, but it is not dead. It is still there, and people are still allied to their so-called the ethnic chiefs or tribal chiefs. And finally, it's going to be the economy. Kenya's economy has been really undergoing some of the toughest times in the region.
I see.
Number one, because of the global issues, and number two, because of just sheer corruption.
I see.
So to conclude, maybe those are my words. That's my opinion.
Yes. Suleiman, about 30 seconds, just in the summary. Should Kenya pull off this in a very free and fair manner, do you think that could have an impact on the region? Because Kenya is in a tough neighborhood. The neighbors, some of them are, well, I don't know. What do you think? In 30 seconds, what do you think will be the impact of the results of the Kenyan election?
Of course, as far as the region is concerned, the region will be happy, but the impact is that you have got dead institutions in the other countries. A country like Uganda is irredeemable. It is beyond redeem. Kenya, I mean, Uganda, Rwanda, South Sudan, Burundi, even in the 19th century, Douglas, you cannot save them now. Kenya is around the age of 21st century. The other ones are in 19th century. They have not even reached 20th century. So there is nothing to copy from Kenya. As you have said, in Uganda, Rwanda, Burundi, DRC, they cannot even allow
opposition leader
gathering of people. There is no even free expression. The media is gagged. The judiciary is rotten. The security institutions are partisan. They are tribal institutions. They are just like militia. So you cannot talk of something to copy, because you need to reform the whole system in these particular countries, South Sudan, Rwanda, Burundi, Uganda, DRC. Those are dead institutions, 19th century, Douglas.
I see. Well,
we pray for Kenya to take it off, and we pray that the Kenyans will enjoy
maybe the results may have an impact, and then people may wake up in those other countries. Well, we're out of time, gentlemen. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Fred Omolo, a Kenyan journalist, Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Sidrak Franklin. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. Just in case you missed any or part of this program, you can still access it by going to our main website at www.vonews.com. Click on Reporters Roundtable, and you can find the program there. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, in Washington, wishing you all the best.